I'm Michelle Martin, and you're listening to Tell Me More from NPR News. It's time for our weekly visit to the barbershop, where the guys talk about whatever's in the news and whatever's on their minds. Sitting in the chairs for a shape-up this week are freelance writer and blogger Jimmy Israel, civil rights attorney and editor Arsalan Iftikhar, media executive Nick Charles, and columnist Gustavo Arellano. I may jump in once or twice, but for now, take it away, Jimmy.
Hey, thanks so much, Michelle. Fellas, what's up? Welcome to the shop. How we doing?
Hey, Jimmy.
What's going on, man?
Oh, man, well, Senator Barack Obama has yet another pastor problem. This time, it's not the Reverend Wright. It's another guest speaker at Trinity Union Church of Christ. This is Michael Flager. Now, he's a Catholic priest that has a lot of interaction with the black community in Chicago. And he was there, I believe, this past Sunday, declaring that Clinton thought her white privilege entitled her to the presidency. Michelle, we got some tape on that.
I think we do.
Right?
I think you do. Want to hear it?
Sure, drop it.
Yeah,
okay.
Drop that.
Here it is.
When Hillary was crying, and people said that was put on, I really don't believe it was put on. I really believe that she just always thought, this is mine. I'm Bill's wife, I'm white, and this is mine. I just gotta get up and step into the plate. And then out of nowhere came, hey, I'm Barack Obama. And she said, oh, damn, where did you come from? I'm white! I'm entitled! There's a black man stealing my show!
And I just have to say, for the record, Father Flager is also white. He is the senior pastor of a predominantly African-American Roman Catholic congregation, but he's also, if that's relevant, back to you, Jimmy. Mm-hmm.
Thanks so much. What is it with the gravelly voice? But I digress. Gustavo, my man, welcome back. I haven't seen you in a while. What's up with your boy Flager, man? What's going on with him?
I think both sides need to tell their pastors, their main supporters, just shut up already. Both sides are saying really silly things. You have Geraldine Ferraro saying one thing. Now you have this pastor saying another thing. I don't necessarily disagree with what he had to say, but I just it's making Obama look even worse. By association, it must be bad for him right now this morning. He has to spin his way out of another pastor saying stuff that the rest of America doesn't want to hear.
A-Train, you're on record as an Obama supporter. I'm not supporting anybody just now, but I do resent the idea that he has to jump in and answer for every yahoo that speaks anywhere that he's ever been. I don't co-sign the idea of apologize for other people. What do you say?
Well, I think, like we've talked about many times in the barbershop before, that our presidential election has really devolved into a YouTube presidential campaign where we're not talking about energy policy, we're not talking about Iraq, we're not talking about healthcare. I think, the main thing, if you look at the disparity between the Republican and Democratic parties, you had Senator John McCain very recently denounce and reject the endorsements of Reverend John Hagee and Reverend Rod Parsley, which is something that, we've been saying here on the barbershop for months. And he only waited until it was politically expedient for him. Whereas on the Democratic side, Barack Obama is almost required to distance and condemn the silly statements of people that he's associated with the instant that they happen.
I think Republicans would have a different point of view on this. I think that they would argue that everybody's doing what's politically expedient, that he has a very long relationship with Jeremiah Wright. Father Flager's not his minister,
right?
But he's a key figure that's politically expedient, too.
When the controversies arise, you always see condemnation immediately from Barack Obama's camp, whereas with John McCain, we had to wait months and months and months and months and months for us to say, hey, and Parsley's name before, they realized, it's become a political
liability. But what about Jimmy's point? Jimmy's point is, why should these political figures be in the business of disavowing things that people say in church? And to what degree? And I think some of the conservative religious leaders have been making a point that this is the whole reason why bringing politics, and church together is not a great idea.
Absolutely.
Because they want to be free to say what the hell they want to say.
Well, and not only that, we all know that the Constitution states that there's no religious test for public office. And unfortunately, it seems as though religion and faith is playing more and more of a critical role in this presidential election, whereas, the key issues that should be affecting all Americans are not being discussed.
Well, Nick made the point, though, that these candidates opened the door. Nick?
Yeah, you know, how you doing, Michelle?
Hi,
my thesis has always been that these people open the door to it, particularly Obama talking about his faith and telling Democrats not to be afraid of being people of faith. My thing about Reverend Flagler is I agree with him totally. You know, my thing is the problem at the end of the campaign is Obama now have to come out and say, oh, I'm sorry about it because it's winding down and has to be gracious to Hillary Clinton. But this is something, you know, whether he said with a gravelly voice or in a kind of heated, wonderful exchange that he had in the pulpit, the fact is that's part of this whole campaign in that maybe, you know, maybe he could tone it down on the race aspect, but the idea of entitlement, you know, she was the presumptive nominee for the last year and a half. And out of nowhere came this comment called Barack Obama. And whether you support him or not, he has run a brilliant race. He's on the verge, on the precipice of becoming the Democratic nominee. And, you know, I don't know, you know, talking about her crying in New Hampshire, you know, maybe that's a little cheap shot. But the fact is there still is a sense in the Clinton campaign and around people close to her who don't want to give up that this still is ours.
You know what, Nick, you make a great point. The problem with Flagler and Right for Me was that they were trying to shorthand really complicated ideas. White privilege isn't anything you can really – first of all, I don't know if you should be talking about it from the pulpit. And it's certainly nothing – I mean, people write their dissertations on it, so I don't know that you can shorthand it in a sermon and just kind of blithely just kind of drill past it without offering some kind of better explanation.
Well, if you've ever been to one of these sermons, then short is not a word that you would be using.
But
so I'm not sure. But anyway, but speaking of this whole question of the kinds of conversations that are out of bounds or not, does anybody want to talk about that whole comment by Liz Trotta on Fox about take him out?
That's so weird. Isn't there tape on that?
Do you want to hear that?
Yeah,
and just to set it up, there was an on-air conversation with Fox News anchor Eric Shawn about Senator Clinton's RFK remarks, which I think you know you all have spoken about. And Liz Trotta, who's a journalist, former editor at the Washington Times, confused Osama and Obama. We can debate whether that was intentional or not, but here it is.
Man. Mm-hmm.
And now we have what some are reading as a suggestion that somebody knock off Obama. Well, both, we could.
No, she later said she was sorry.
Sorry about saying that you wanted to bump. You're going to say sorry after you go on national television and suggest that you would be happy if one of the presidential candidates got, quote, bumped off. I mean, This is redunculous. If anyone had said this about the white Republican nominee, they'd probably be thrown in Guantanamo Bay with a few waterboards. It's a double standard. You know, she's a white Republican on Fox News. She got away with saying it. Nobody on the Democratic side of the aisle would ever get away with it had it been said in the reverse.
Well, let's just keep in mind, Fox News is like one step above Nickelodeon. Nick, jump in here.
My thing about, Liz Trotta, people like her, you know, she committed two really, really big crimes there. The first one was confusing Osama and Obama, which is maybe a Freudian slip, but it has something meaning behind it. And the second thing is the fact that she talked about, you know, bumping them off. And the bumping off, even as a candidate, is bad enough. But the fact of the matter is this man has a real shot at being president. So by extension, if he's president in December and he's sworn in January, will this same trend continue that, oh, man, you know, something, he could get shot. And we wouldn't mind if he gets shot. Now you're talking about the assassination for president.
Right.
And that's the kind of mentality that's going on the right and in some parts of the left, people who don't support him, Barack Obama. And it's very troubling, particularly 1968, when you look back and Martin Luther King, Robert F. Kennedy, it's really, really disturbing that 40 years later, they have people who think like this.
I know, it's what's funny to me, is not the word, is that just why would anybody joke about this? I guess the trauma that this country has suffered around the assassination of political leaders, I just find it strange that anybody would find it a source of humor.
I have an answer for that. An answer for that. If I can jump right in here. I think this reminds me of the N-word fiasco we saw a couple of years, maybe a year or so ago with K.K. Kramer. Then after that, everybody started dropping the N-bomb because people wanted the airtime. Now, I think now the way to get airtime is to say anything that can be perceived as anti or kind of dangerous involving Obama. And I think that's why I think she did it. I think it was intentional, and I think that's why she laughed it off. That's why I think this keeps coming up. Gustavo.
I can't even remember a single time in any presidential campaign where people were openly wondering, geez, is this presidential candidate going to be shot?
Right.
People don't talk about it. It's just you don't do it on either side. It's just extremely bad, extremely disgusting. Yet all of a sudden with Obama in just, what, the good year and a half or so that he's been campaigning, I can't tell you how many times I've heard, oh, well, Obama might be assassinated. Obama might be assassinated. Is this like a collective fear on the American soul? Or is it something that people say is inevitable because if there's a black man, you know, a messianic black man coming up in American society, that he has to be shot? Either way, it's just why would you even say those things? It's bad. It's just absolutely bad.
Well, it's been a sotto voce conversation, I think. Jimmy, I don't know if you agree with this in the African-American community for some time, expressing, I think, anxiety about his safety and, of course, a deep wish for his well-being and success. You know, we had Benny Thompson on the program. He's the chairman of the House Committee on Homeland Security to talk about this because we debated, should we even speak on this publicly? But we just felt that if people are talking about it privately, then we should try to surface it. And I don't know. It raises all kinds of complicated questions, like Gustavo was saying. But
Nick,
jump in here, please.
No, what I was going to say is that the really, really disturbing comment or sad comment that came out of South Carolina is an old woman said, you know, I don't want to vote for him because I worry if I vote for him and he wins, he'll get killed. And so it's so ingrained in black community, in some parts of black community, particularly the older black community, that stuff like this is inevitable. And that's the thing about talking about it. There's inevitability about it, is that we don't care what people say, how much Secret Service he has, how many times they change his entrance, his exits. At some point, somebody's going to get to this guy and he's going to be shot. And then we'll be reliving the Malcolm X, the Martin Luther King, the Robert F. Kennedy nightmare again.
Well, speaking of, obviously it's about underlying fears. Jimmy, I don't know, did you want to talk about this, speaking of fears, this whole Dunkin' Donuts controversy with Rachel? Anybody know what I'm talking about?
Jimmy, do you want to? Yeah, you know what? Dunkin' Donuts, they pulled an ad featuring cooking show host and my dream fiance, Rachel Ray, wearing what some thought to be a Muslim scarf called a kafia.
Thank you.
Arsalan, A-Train, help me out with that. What is a kafia?
Kafia is a headdress that has been worn by Arab Bedouin herders for centuries and is now the latest fashion on the runways of Milan and Paris. And now a Dunkin' Donuts ad that was yanked by the right-wing blogosphere and uber conservative blogger Michelle Malkin.
You say that, but I think she makes a great point that at least Dunkin' Donuts is being sensitive of course they're also being paranoid. I mean, everybody's being paranoid. But what I think is that Dunkin' Donuts should be commended for responding. I do.
Oh.
And maybe over responding.
Hey.
I'm just that dude. Nick, come in here and get it.
There is no reason for they should have pulled that ad. They could have responded. Obviously, there was no intention. They probably know what a kafia is. And the fact of the matter, it was really, really identified with Yasser Arafat, who used to wear it every day. And he had to wear it to bed, to the bathroom, everywhere he went. And so for Michelle Malkin to raise this as an issue and then to cow these folks into pulling their ad is really, really disturbing. Because we haven't heard from Rachel Ray, who I'm sure is not a member or supports any terrorist organization.
I mean, this is show.
Arsalan is about to choke. he can barely speak. He's so mad. Go ahead, Arsalan.
This is the second redunculous story of the day. I mean, what's next? Is she going to go after Ronald McDonald if he goes to eat a falafel at Trader Joe's? I mean, this.
Well, what if it was
Kente? Hold on. Listen, this is pandering to the worst politics of fear in this country. A little bit about Michelle Malkin. This lady wrote an entire book defending the internment of 140,000 Japanese Americans during World War II. And ironically enough, she herself is Filipino. And so if she lived in that time, you know, they'd probably round her up also. And she'd be like, no, I'm Filipino. And they'd probably be like, yeah, that's what they all say, lady. You know,
But you could at least argue that then she has the courage of her convictions, that she's not exempting herself from a policy because she would. I mean, I don't know. You could make the argument that it's intellectually honest.
But the thing is, you know, a bunch of right-wing bloggers sitting around in their tidy whities in their mama's basement, you know, trying to come up with conspiracy theories that somehow Dunkin' Donuts is, you know, somehow complicit in terrorism. I mean, I wouldn't be surprised if she was at Trader Joe's looking for Ronald McDonald and his falafel.
All right, y'all. All right. Well, check this out. Well, you know what? strangely, Hillary Clinton picked up the coveted Ricky Martin endorsement, which some people think will influence his fan base.
Well, I don't know. Do you want to talk about that or the NBA?
Three.
NBA.
NBA.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Let's talk about the NBA because you talk about something that's inevitable. You know, the Lakers beat the San Antonio Spurs, final score 100-92. Ginobili was trying to carry the Spurs on his back, but to no avail. The MVP, Kobe, came out of nowhere in those ugly tennis shoes to close it for L.A. Arsalan, get it.
Yeah. NBA playoffs, 40 games, 40 nights, win or go home, be history or make history. The Western Conference, L.A. over Spurs, 100-92 in Game 5. To Spurs fans everywhere, you guys got shafted in Game 4. That was a foul on Brent Barry. Derek Fisher fouled him. I feel bad for y'all. They were deflated. They were demoralized. L.A. walked into the finals. In the East, Celtics and Pistons. That is going to be the story now. Game 5, 106-102, and we saw the return of Ray Jesus Shuttlesworth Allen. Y'all are haters. I've been saying it for weeks. My prediction, being an honest man, we're gonna get spanked in Detroit for Game 6 tonight because you don't go into Detroit and beat them. It's going to Game 7, and then it's going to go into overtime in Game 7, and everyone should watch.
Gustavo, wrap it up for me, please. Wrap it up.
Yeah. I got to, you know, even though I'm here in Southern California, I got to go with the Pistons. I've always been a fan of Tayshaun Prince. He's, you know, since his high school days out here. Too bad he went off to play, I think, for Kentucky, and now he's all the way in Detroit. It'd be better if he's out with the Lakers here. But, you know, Detroit all the way, that's what I say.
Can I be that dude that says, you know, I'm really disappointed with the NBA because, you know, the dream matchup is Celtics-Lakers, and it seems it's going to happen. And I think with a little help from the referees, it's going to happen.
That's true.
So now my whole thing is, am I watching real or am I watching Memorex?
All right.
Nick Charles. Way downtown, that's a wrap. Got to kick it back to that lady in the house, all Michelle right. Martin.
Nick Charles is the Vice President of Digital Content at BET.com. He joined us from our bureau in New York. Jimmy Israel is a freelance writer who blogs for TV1 Online and TheRoot.com. He joined us from WCPN in Cleveland. Arsalan Iftikhar is a contributing editor for Islamica Magazine and a civil rights attorney. He joined us in our studio here in Washington. And Gustavo Arellano writes the Ask a Mexican column for the Orange County Weekly. He joined us from KUCI in Irvine, California. Thank you all so much.
Peace.
Thanks a lot, Michelle.
Yep, yep.